It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a new public opinion project aims to measure what issues are most important to Wisconsin voters in the upcoming election. We'll talk to one of the organizers about the Main Street Agenda and its upcoming town hall events around the state. First, Florida's Republican Governor Ron DeSantis claimed credit last week for flying about 50 mostly Venezuelan migrants to Martha's Vineyard, a small vacation island in Massachusetts. Republican governors in states like Texas and Arizona have been using the tactic for months, busing or flying migrants to northern cities, mostly under the leadership of Democrats. But immigrants' rights advocates and Democrats have called the practice cruel and possibly illegal, with some saying it could amount to human trafficking. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this move by some governors of states in the South? Do you think the U.S. needs to change its strategy on the southern border? What would you change about the immigration system if you could? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Elise Cohen is an associate professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Elise, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be with you, Rob.
Before we dig into some of the specifics, Elise, what's been your reaction as you see these reports of migrants from Venezuela and elsewhere being bused or flown to cities often unprepared for their arrival?
Yeah, that's a great point you raise about the lack of advance notice here. So I think if it were really about addressing the policy problem of the influx of migrants along the southern border, we wouldn't see the lack of coordination ahead of transporting the migrants, which that alone sort of suggests it's not really about addressing the policy problem, but more about messaging and symbolic politics, even sort of picking up on the urban-rural divide, since a lot of these Democratic-leaning so-called sanctuary areas are in much more urban centers in the country.
I want to give a listen to Florida Governor DeSantis talking last night at a Republican campaign event in Green Bay. Here's what he had to say about the migrants that Florida sent to Martha's Vineyard last week.
They said they're a sanctuary city. They say that nobody, no human being is illegal. Everyone's welcome. So this is a place, there's jobs available, there's hotels and Airbnb available. And honestly, these were folks who got the transport that Biden totally abandoned. They were homeless. They were hungry. So they hit the jackpot to be able to be in the wealthiest sanctuary jurisdiction in the world.
Elise, you mentioned the political symbolism there. Do you think there's a case to be made, as Governor DeSantis is claiming, that, well, maybe the people who were sent to Martha's Vineyard were better off?
Yeah, it's interesting because you could hear the way he was cueing the crowd to cheer when he was talking about the idea that these are very wealthy enclaves. And we also saw, by the way, in the past fall, Senator Ted Cruz introduced federal legislation that was advocating something very similar, the Stop the Surge Act, as he called it, to relocate migrants in the southern border to Democratic-leaning enclaves. And when he was doing press releases on that, he gave speeches very similar to what you just played in that clip, where he was saying, you know, these are the places that Democratic elites hold their cocktail parties. So there's really this partisan antagonism. There's this sort of mocking aspect to it that seems to go beyond just what's best for the interests of the migrants or what's best for relocating them to places where they'll have more services available.
Who are we talking about here? Who are the migrants who are being relocated by bus or plane here?
Well, what's interesting with this case is, unlike the past couple of years where we've seen the majority of migrants crossing from Central America and the Northern Triangle countries, we have a lot more now from Venezuela and from Cuba. So there's been kind of a change in the who. We also see a lot more single adults, still a lot of families and children. But in Venezuela, the crisis has become so severe. It's being termed one of the worst peacetime crises in the past 100 years, perhaps even on par or worse than the Great Depression in the United States. So that can help us understand why so many people have left Venezuela. There's water shortages, food scarcity, constant power blackouts, and not even access to medical care or basic medicines. And we saw that around 94% of Venezuelans last year were falling into poverty levels, which is just a really unprecedented level of poverty in the country. So that can sort of help us understand why the majority in this group is coming from Venezuela.
Let's talk about asylum seekers now. I believe some of the people who were transported fall into that category. Can you talk about the sort of legal protections someone who's claiming asylum here in the U.S. does and doesn't have?
Absolutely. Asylum is a legal right, and it's protected not only under international law, but also under U.S. law. So these migrants, many of them have filed for asylum, and they have been released legally from federal immigration authorities as they await their asylum cases. And part of asylum law is that there's freedom of movement. And so what that means is these asylum seekers need to periodically check in with federal immigration authorities, like a local ICE agent, for example, but they are permitted to travel throughout the U.S. There's nothing that would require them to be in a certain jurisdiction, particularly just based on, you know, partisanship or that it's a liberal-leaning jurisdiction.
We're talking to Elise Cohen, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW Green Bay, looking at migrants in the U.S. Being transported by bus or plane to northern cities coming from places like Texas or being transported by Florida or Arizona. You could join in with your reactions to this story, your questions about it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. At least the basic notion, if it was maybe being done in an organized way of arranging different places around the country for migrants who are maybe waiting for their processing of their asylum request, is that such a bad idea? Should we be spreading people out around the country instead of concentrating them more toward the southern border?
Yeah, that's a really great question, Rob, because the federal authorities have also looked at relocation as a way to help with overcrowded facilities. And they have considered plans, you know, internally within the Department of Homeland Security, for example, of how they could kind of effectively coordinate and move migrants to different regions that are a bit more north of the southern border towns. But that was something that was done, like you said, with coordination in mind. And it wasn't something that was made politically available as any kind of political statement or symbolic politics. So it's sort of different in that way. But the idea of coordination, I think, is what's really key, as well as the idea of deception, the extent to which there seems to have been an element of deception in enticing the migrants to board the chartered planes, and even with Governor Abbott in previous months enticing some of them to board the buses, sending them to New York or Washington, D.C. or Chicago. So I think that's what's really key. And if we're looking at the legality, we're going to need to get more info on how much these migrants were promised versus what the reality was when they arrived.
Right. There are going to be legal challenges, it looks like, from lawyers stepping up to represent the migrants. On that very issue of consent to be moved here and the idea that they were deceived, I think we're going to discover new interesting points of American law. What is your read on that issue and how important the question of deception is here?
Yeah, it is a really murky gray area because human trafficking itself usually involves coerced or, you know, lured under false pretenses, but for the intent of some sort of commercial gain, whether it's labor exploitation, sexual exploitation. And in this case, I doubt they will be able to produce evidence of that kind of intent since it's more about the political statement of it. But there is that commonality of deception or luring them under false pretenses. So there may be more of a basis for something like deprivation of liberty or fraud. So these kinds of lawsuits that the migrants themselves would file are more likely, I think, to gain traction for criminal charges than anything the Democratic lawmakers are proposing in pressuring the Department of Justice. I think it would really need to unfold from the migrants themselves as the clients, kind of saying they were lured and they would not have given their consent to board those planes if they realized where they were going and that there were not really job and housing and schooling opportunities where they were headed.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Pete is with us now in Marinette. Pete, hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
I just find it interesting that none of these points were brought up until these people were sent to Democrat-leaning and liberal cities, right? I still believe this is a pure case of not in my backyard. these places like Texas and Arizona are overrun by these people, and all of the resources there are stretched to the limit. They don't have the jobs, they don't have the police, they don't have the medical care, none of that stuff. You see these people dying, trying to cross over, they're dying in the deserts because we can't handle the influx, but nobody seemed to really get up in arms until it started going to the Democrat areas. So I'm curious how you can explain to me how this is not a case of just simply not in my backyard.
Pete, thanks for the call. Elise, what do you think?
Yeah, well, Pete actually raises some really important points about the double standards, even with Democratic policymakers. And he's right that Democrats themselves tend to be a little more quiet when we look at the federal policies of something very similar to what DeSantis has done, because DeSantis said, well, I've sent people into Texas to intercept them before they can arrive on the territory of Florida, right? To then intercept their journey and reroute them so they don't come to Florida state territory. Well, the U.S. as a federal entity has been doing that for decades, since the 1990s with Prevention Through Deterrence, intercepting migrants, as the caller, as Pete mentioned, in the deserts or in the sea areas, pushing them out away from U.S. territory so they can't make it to U.S. territory to claim asylum. So there is that hypocrisy, and that including Democratic members of Congress and Democratic presidents, that's actually just been a national policy we've had for a long time. But liberal groups have often pointed that out, and I think migrant advocacy groups have been pointing that out for a while. It just hasn't gotten as much attention.
Thanks for the call, Pete. We're talking to Elise Cohen, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Green Bay, with us to talk about why some Republican governors have been busing or flying migrants to Democratic cities in the north. Questions about whether the practice is legal. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your reaction to all of this? What do you want to know about the rights migrants do and don't have when they enter the U.S.? Do you want to see more sanctuary cities defined in various ways across the country? What questions do you have for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. Right now, we're picking up our talk about immigration and why some southern governors are sending migrants by bus or plane to cities in the north. Elise Cohen stays with us at UW-Green Bay. You can join in with your reactions to this news story, your questions about it, what you'd like to see change, if anything, on U.S. immigration policy, especially at the southern border. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Back to your calls now. Chris is with us in Oshkosh. Chris, hello.
Chris, hello.
Yes, good afternoon.
What did you want to bring up, Chris?
Yeah, it's readily apparent to me and just about everyone I speak to of both political stripes that our economy in the United States is completely dependent on, I don't know what term to use politically correct, the guest workers, alien workers, you know what I mean. I'm not sure what to call it.
Sure.
For decade after decade, president after president of both parties, this has been a third rail of American politics. Nobody is willing to address the problem. The problem, as I see it, is that an awful lot of these foreign workers are operating under false credentials, working for people, drawing a paycheck in a very conventional fashion. This means they're paying into Social Security. That is money that they will never see back. So we have 10 million odd workers who are contributing and making a false increase in the level of Social Security funding. That makes it very, very prickly for our government to find a way to legitimize these workers and still protect Social Security. Your thoughts?
Chris, thanks for the call. Elise?
Yeah, Chris is right that the economy is very much dependent on this kind of labor market. And this is why I think for people that are really focused on solving immigration as a policy problem, and for a long time in the early 2000s, there was bipartisan support. How can we create legal pathways for people to have the temporary residency, for people to meet sort of rise and fall of labor demand? And what we saw was really after the rise of the Tea Party during the Obama administration, there was a big shift where it was no longer about the kind of practical aspects that Chris is bringing up in terms of the policy solutions, but it was really more about the politics of it and what each party is purporting to stand for, and really refusal to compromise over things like he's saying with how we could address the economic side of this. So I think that's what really does get lost, is we don't have these kind of very pragmatic discussions of what's best for the economy on the policy side. It's really much more about political messaging and symbolism and the identity around immigration issues.
Chris, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Mike joins us now in Shorewood. Mike, hi.
Hi, everyone. I appreciate the show today. I guess my comment is more about racializing or scapegoating, you know, people of color. I just wonder, you know, if this was Ukrainian refugees or asylees, how this just wouldn't happen. Of course, that Santos and these other governors are using, you know, people from South America or from Mexico to sort of make these political points. And my last comment would just be, we can handle the numbers. And I agree with the other callers that, you know, if we can handle 15,000 Afghan refugees in Wisconsin and get them, you know, moved around the country, we should be able to find the political will to do this. Thank you.
Thanks for that call. Lisa, to that first point, what do you think of Mike's argument that this is especially targeting people from Latin American backgrounds?
Yeah, the racialized aspect is really crucial. I should mention that when Senator Ted Cruz introduced the Stop the Surge Act last year, he did that right after, if listeners remember, last fall of 2021, there was the large arrival of thousands of Haitian asylum seekers and migrants under that bridge in Del Rio, Texas. And so it was really in the shadow of that very specific concern about Haitians that Cruz introduced the legislation. And we also need to give credit, of course, to former President Trump, who actually was the one to first propose busing migrants to liberal sanctuary cities. In 2018 and 2019, he was advocating very much for that and using a lot of that racialized language that Mike is mentioning around Central American asylum seekers as a threat or as related to criminality and gangs. So yeah, we really cannot untether this from the way people see who these immigrants are and why they see them as threatening in their communities.
Thanks for that call. Scott is with us now in Milton. Scott, hello.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I can't be more proud of Governor Ron DeSantis and Craig Abbott. I think the first time the Republican Party is actually punching up and not letting themselves getting steamrolled, and they're bringing the issue to the Democrats' front door, literally doing it. And by doing that, it's exposing this issue of immigration, and Democrats are allowing immigration to be an issue that's touched on at the heart, and it's supposed to make you feel for these people, and I do. And I'd love to see our immigration system be reformed to make it streamlined, but as much as the Democrats have let down their voters, and they have not passed any sweeping legislation to make this problem easier, it's just been an executive issue, and allowing the Biden administration to pass to be able to open their borders and want to bring these people in just because they're seeking asylum and they want a better life. And as much as I want to see them improve their life, they need to go through it in a legal manner.
Scott, thanks for the call. To that last point, Elise, what are the options for doing, as Scott says, seeking a better life in a legal manner? How accessible is that?
Yeah, I think that Scott's bringing up this point where even liberals within the Democratic Party have sort of pushed back on the fact that the Biden administration hasn't really come through on a lot of the policy promises around helping ease the journey from asylum to legal status. We did see an attempt to halt Title 42 that was just immediately expelling people, even preventing them from having their asylum interviews at the southern border. However, that policy has been kept in place due to federal court's injunction. So there's a lot of frustration even among Democrats. And then you can hear Scott really is connecting with a Republican message, sort of standing up to that hypocrisy within Democrats. And Governor Abbott said something very similar, that he believes these relocation efforts really, quote, take the border to Biden. So I think that it's a moment where we could see some Republicans and Democrats might come together in being critical of Biden. But for the most part, Democrats are much more focused on the migrants being used as political pawns in this moment. So I think that part of the conversation will probably be a bit delayed until these migrants' needs are met more immediately.
Scott, thanks for that call. Time for one more caller. Daisy is with us in Madison. Daisy, hello.
Hi there. I'm calling in, I guess, just with, like, hoping for some clarification. I'm a teacher. I work with students and many families who are coming in, and they have come in legally. They are waiting for court dates that are sometimes backed up 2 years. And I have students who are hoping to apply for colleges or hoping to get a license, and they don't have the documentation they need to do so, or to rent an apartment, for example. And I'm wondering if you could help me understand the root behind this problem. Is it the fact that courts are moving slowly, or there's not enough people to process paperwork? And then if there's any other resources I can be pointing students to, I just feel like I would love to have more information to help these families move forward with their lives and not have to wait 2 years to potentially get a license, rent an apartment, apply for it.
Gotcha. Daisy, we just have a little over a minute left. Elise, what would you tell Daisy?
I think for Daisy's question, one of the biggest root causes is the backlog in the court cases. There's about 1.9 million pending court cases in the U.S. immigration courts. So hiring more judges, finding a way to invest more resources into that process would be key. And then if Daisy's looking for some resources, Voces de la Frontera is really active in Wisconsin for providing information on how to help with some of those possible student needs that Daisy's working with.
Daisy, thanks for that call. And Elise, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Rob.
That's Elise Cohen, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. She's with us today to talk about Republican governors sending migrants to cities controlled by Democrats, questions over the goals of that tactic and the legality of it. Still time for you to share your thoughts. You can email ideas@WPR.org. Coming up after the news, what issues are most important to you in the upcoming election? A new public opinion project wants to find out. We'll learn more about the Main Street agenda and its efforts to hear from and meet with voters around Wisconsin. You can get us started right now. What do you wish you heard candidates talking more about, the media talking more about, as we get closer and closer to Election Day? Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a Wisconsin forager is on a mission to eat only what he can forage for 1 month. We'll talk to him about what he's eating and the message he's trying to send. Now, Wisconsin Public Radio is partnering with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison for a project that aims to find out what issues are most important to Wisconsin voters. It's called the Main Street Agenda and includes polling and a series of free public town hall events across the state to meet with voters and hear what concerns are on top of their minds. The first town hall event is on Wednesday at Milwaukee Public Library's Centennial Hall starting at 7 p.m. Future town halls will be held in Pewaukee, Green Bay, and Wausau in the lead up to the election. Find out about those events at WPR.org/presents. And you can join in now at 800-642-1234. What issue or issues are most important to you in the upcoming election? Do you think the candidates running for office at various levels are addressing those issues that are important to you? Do you feel like the candidates and maybe even the media are overlooking important stuff or, you know, talking more horse race than substantive issues? Call in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You could also email ideas@WPR.org. Susan Webb Yockey is director of the La Follette School of Public Affairs, helping organize this project, and she's a professor of public affairs at UW-Madison. Susan, welcome back to Central Time.
Rob, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Like a lot of people, Susan, I see a lot of campaign ads. I get a lot of campaign emails. I know what candidates and parties want voters to think about. Why is it important to reach out and try to get a sense of what's on the minds of the voters themselves?
Well, I think today a lot of people are frustrated with politics, right? The horse race coverage, the focus on what divides us as opposed to what brings us together. And that's really where this project came together, this Main Street Agenda project between WPR, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and the LaFollette School, to try to figure out what are some of the issues that people care about in terms of public policy, and how do we get our elected officials to start talking about them.
And you've got a few different ways of doing this. Last time I talked to you, it was about a survey that you and the LaFollette School did. Could you tell us about that? And then what's led into the town hall effort?
Absolutely. So this is kind of an interesting, the Main Street Agenda Project is sort of interesting in that all three of the institutions wanted to do the same thing, kind of get the public talking about the policy issues they cared about. And we were all kind of going about it on our own way. And so let me tell you about what LaFollette started with. And that was about a year ago, we did our inaugural LaFollette School policy poll. And the idea behind the policy poll was to reach out all the way across Wisconsin. So we actually had over 1,500 responses from 71 of the 72 counties on a large public policy poll. And the point of the poll was to ask, what are the issues that you care about the most? Really take the temperature of Wisconsinites and then report that information back and let people look at the data and kind of analyze the data on their own, which is what we did all of this past year. That was really the LaFollette School's main effort in trying to take the temperature on public policy issues here in our state.
And then we've got these town halls coming up, and I know Gannett and the News and the Journal Sentinel have surveys of their own, and they're trying to go, I think, just beyond, you know, check the box, but also explain and get people talking and typing or talking about why these issues matter. Why do you think that's important?
I think it's so important to think about having a dialogue around some of these issues. And that's what these four upcoming events that are taking place across the state are going to do. So we're going to have LaFollette faculty experts at each of those events. And those experts are going to share, you know, information and evidence and analysis and knowledge. They're going to share information from our LaFollette School poll, which again occurred last year and was a scientific poll of Wisconsinites. But we're going to combine that kind of LaFollette piece with a part of the agenda in each of the events focused on really listening, listening to what citizens are saying across the political spectrum. So, you know, Republicans, Democrats, and independents on the different public policy issues that they care about. And so citizens are going to be a huge part of the agenda for each of these events, too.
I know from my vantage in the media, sometimes it's easy to think, okay, that person's a Republican, so they're going to believe A, B, and C. And that person's a Democrat, they're going to believe 1, 2, and 3. But then I know from talking to callers and from some of the responses that this project has gotten already, for many people, it's a lot more complicated than that. And I think it might surprise people how much nuance there is out there.
Absolutely. I mean, people are complicated. You know, I'm a social scientist, and a huge part of my job is to seek the truth, to figure out what are the commonalities, what are the systematic things that drive people, in this case, in their politics. You know, I'm a political scientist, so that's what I'm interested in. But people are really more complicated than how they boil down in terms of their partisan identification. And that is one of the reasons why we want to get people talking, to kind of figure out those complexities, but also to try to see where there's some points of unity across the political spectrum. And I think that will give people some courage to, and hopefully some courage for our elected officials to identify some of those issues and really go after them and tackle them on behalf of our citizens as well.
That's interesting. Maybe a solution or a part of a solution anyway to polarization here. If everybody on side A believes that, well, there are two sides in the first place, but also that everybody on side B automatically believes these things that are the opposite of what we believe, and we don't get any nuance beyond that, that could be one thing that's driving polarization. Do you think that's part of the story?
I do think that's part of the story. And I think when we resort to just talking points, and it's too easy to demonize the other side. But when you hear from them what they're going through, why they prioritize a particular issue, you start to understand their perspective more. And that is so important in today's society.
We're talking to Susan Webb-Yaki from the LaFollette School of Public Affairs, part of this project. The Main Street Agenda, we here at WPR are part of this. The Journal Sentinel, part of it, their ideas lab. Try to figure out what is on voters' minds, what we care about, and why. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you care about in this midterm election? Why? What led you there? Is there something that you think would surprise you about people who maybe know some of your political views, an issue that maybe you would surprise them on with what you think of it? Is there an issue that you think is important, but you're not quite sure where you stand? Because it's complicated. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Good afternoon. This is a great topic. It's very timely. Thanks for the opportunity to share my opinion. I really believe that public money should be spent on everyone, regardless of your age or gender or, you know, walk of life or economic class. I really believe our state parks unite us as a state. I hiked 4 miles yesterday in Copper Falls State Park, and I did Pattison State Park last month. I really think that we need to fund our parks and get these picnic tables painted and repaired. There are projects I know the DNR has all over the state that need to be fully funded, and we got the money. I say let's do it 100%.
Jeff, thanks a lot for that call. And this is an example, Susan, of the kind of thing you might hear, a kind of a basic bread and butter issue that probably no politician on either side is going to think, oh, this is going to pump up the base, right?
Maybe not, but boy, does Jeff identify something that does bring people together. You know, people want to explore and really use the natural wonder of Wisconsin. It's one of the reasons why I moved here was because the beauty of the state, and I know I'm not alone. And so I think Jeff identifies something that really can bring Wisconsinites together, and that is, you know, public spending on public goods like parks that a lot of people can use and appreciate.
Thanks again for the call, Jeff, at 800-642-1234. But, okay, the incentive structure for a politician, Susan, I could spend my time, if I'm running for office, talking about state parks. Everybody likes them. Or I could focus on a divisive issue that I know is going to rally my base and maybe help drive them to donate and to vote. How does our incentive structure skew things one way or the other?
Well, you know, Rob, we're moving into the general election, away from the primary elections now. And so the hope would be that candidates who made it through the primaries are now looking more for the consensus issues. So they rallied their base, they got the nomination, and now they're going to need to get the votes of some of Wisconsin's independents to win, at least in the statewide elections. And so if you go back to the La Follette Schools policy poll, you know, what were some of the consensus issues for people across the political spectrum, including independents? And those really were healthcare, some economic issues, the federal budget deficit, for instance, where people really care about the federal budget deficit and sort of in some of the fact that we might be extending on that debt to the next generation. You know, those two issues in our poll, across all age groups, all income groups, the lowest and highest levels of education, and all political identifications identified those issues as either quite a problem or an extremely big problem for our country. So if you're looking for consensus issues, they're out there. In particular, I would point out healthcare is one of them.
We're talking to public affairs professor Susan Webb-Yaki from UW-Madison about the Main Street Agenda Project, which hopes to measure what voters care about the most in the upcoming election. And not just the I care about this and not that, but also some of the why behind it. What led people to these decisions? There are nuanced views in some cases. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you were answering the survey, what issue would be top of mind for you in the upcoming election? Maybe even if it isn't the most important thing, what do you wish you heard more from the candidates about or covered in the media along the way? Are there things where you think, yeah, maybe this is something that both parties can work together on? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with Susan Webb-Yaki about the issues that matter most to voters. She's a professor and director of the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison, a partner in the Main Street Agenda Project, along with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and Wisconsin Public Radio. There's surveys, there's upcoming town halls as well in a few locations around the state. You can town hall right now at 800-642-1234. What do you want candidates to talk about as they compete for your votes this November? Have you heard candidates talk about the issue or issues most important to you? Is the media covering the right stuff along the way? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls. Lynn joins us now in Wauwatosa. Lynn, hello.
Hi. Thank you. This is a lot of interesting things to think about. But my thought is that the whole abortion issue, I know that the people that were anti-choice believe they have the right point of view about abortion. But I'm thinking that because there has been so much publicity since the Supreme Court came down with their decision, so many people are finally seeing how necessary abortion is for women, for families, and that it's a decision that is such a personal one, such a gut-wrenching one for everybody. And hopefully the anti-choice people, bless their hearts, but I hope that they're coming to understand that abortion is necessary.
Lynn, I gotcha. Thanks a lot for the call. And Susan, if I'm not mistaken, the survey you were talking about earlier came out before the Dobbs U.S. Supreme Court decision that overturned Roe v. Wade. But what are you watching for? What are you seeing on the issue of abortion that Lynn brings up?
Yeah, the LaFollette School Policy Poll did come out before the Dobbs decision, but we do have some more information on, Lynn's point on abortion. So the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is also, as part of the Main Street Agenda Project, also doing an opinion survey. So there, anybody that wants to write in and talk about what are some of their top issues that they would like to see both the media cover in advance of the election, as well as our politicians talking about, there's a chance to kind of reply to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel opinion survey as well. And that's been taking data all this summer and include and takes data right now too, if you're interested in participating. Google the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel as well as the Main Street Agenda Project. But to Lynn's point, abortion ranks very highly on that list. So that's an issue that is really concerning to a lot of Wisconsinites. It ranks in the top three behind the future of democracy as well as climate change. I will say that on the opinion survey, this is whoever provides their opinion. And so we do have an overrepresentation in that survey of Democrats. But one of the neat things about the Main Street Agenda Project and the upcoming four events is that we're going to have panels of people talking and listening to each other across the political spectrum.
Lynn, thanks a lot for the call. And talk about nuance on an issue. I've seen survey results. You know, we may think everybody's on one side or the other, and some people are strongly on one side or the other, and a lot of people have mixed feelings one way or the other, or want to see some limits but not all, or sometimes disagree with themselves. There's a lot of, again, nuance in the middle there, Susan.
Absolutely. And, you know, abortion's one of these really interesting issues that you really do need to get people together talking to really understand the dynamics. And we know that because we know that how you ask polling questions on abortion really matters to how people reply, right? So that gives you some insight right there that, you know, horse race polls or political snapshots, they're one type of data, but also getting together and talking through issues and understanding where people are coming from and their perspective is a way to contextualize that, and it's really necessary.
Thanks again for the call, Lynn, at 800-642-1234. Kathy joins us next in Elkhorn. Kathy, hi.
Hi.
What issue did you want to bring up, Kathy?
Well, I think the major issue now is maintaining a safe democracy with, you know, with what happened with the last administration and, you know, not ensuring a safe transfer of power. That can't not happen, or none of these issues will be worked on. It'll be a craziness. And, well, you'll have one ruling and everybody just following suit. You won't have a democracy.
Kathy, thanks a lot for the call. And Susan, I know this is something that has come up in the Main Street Agenda, people concerned about the future of Democratic government.
Absolutely. And I know this will come up in our four events across the state as well. And I hope it does. I mean, this is something that all of us need to pull our heads, our minds, our bodies together and really tackle, because in order for the United States to continue, we have to solve this problem together. And there's concerns on both sides of the aisle, and we need to identify those and work through them together.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Susan Webb Yaki, professor and director of the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison, talking about the Main Street Agenda Project, a partnership between the La Follette School, Wisconsin Public Radio, and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, trying to collect information, figure out what people think about big issues, what you want to hear about. And you could join in at 800-642-1234 in the run-up to the election. What do you want to hear candidates talking about? What do you want to hear the media asking candidates about? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Susan, of course, I'm coming at this from the media angle myself. What are you hoping that media outlets, including Wisconsin Public Radio, might be able to do with some of your final products along the way?
I think that between the polling that the La Follette School did, which is a statistical poll, alongside the opinion survey the information's being collected right now, I'm hoping that, media outlets, all different types of media outlets take that data and think about what are the stories that could really impact Wisconsinites. And I think that's, vital to move forward.
Let's go back to our callers with George on the line in Ashland. George, what issues on your mind?
I'd like to see our candidates asked about where they stand on the division between church and state, between religion and governance. It seems to flow into a lot of issues, schools, abortion, and many other dimensions. I'd like to know where each candidate stands, church versus state, where they draw the line.
George, thanks a lot for that call. Interesting. Susan, is this something that you've had come up at any point so far in the Main Street agenda?
I think it hasn't much come up. And, I think George has put his finger on something that's a really interesting divide across society that we don't talk as much about as we used to. So we used to talk a lot about candidate religion. We used to talk a lot about whether, the role of religion in society. And we're starting to see a lot of our public policy issues intersect with those issues. I mean, certainly the Dobbs decision is front and center recently. But I think putting your finger right on the division between church and state, both the Supreme Court's interpretation of that division, as well as society's interpretation of that, has not been as a part of the Main Street Agenda Project thus far. And I hope it comes out in some of our candidate forums coming forward, four town hall forums coming forward.
Thanks a lot for that call, George, at 800-642-1234. The overall project here, I mean, people do polling all the time, of course, and people do town halls sometimes. Susan, are you hoping to build a model for the way we investigate public opinion for maybe future elections?
Absolutely. I'm really hoping this partnership continues, and I know that there's going to be some efforts after these town halls as well to kind of continue the conversation. And that's on our agenda. We don't want this to be a one-off. These are incredibly important issues. So let me plan a couple ways for your audience members that are here in Madison to continue the conversation as well. The La Follette School is hosting a very large forum next March. So on March 1st, 2023, that's going to be on the topic of trust in government. So we're going to spend a whole day bringing in high profile speakers, having scholars, citizens, politicians come together and talk about the role of trust in government and how that's eroded across time and how that intersects with this idea of the future of democracy. Now, that would be another way to continue the conversation in March 2023.
Susan, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
That's Susan Webb Yaki, a professor and director of the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison. That's one of the partners in the Main Street Agenda Project, along with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and here at Wisconsin Public Radio. The goal to figure out what is on voters' minds, not just a yes or no, pro or con, but some of the thoughts and ideas driving opinions around the state. You can participate in a couple ways. There's that survey Susan mentioned at jsonline.com, the website of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Wherever you are in the state, you can weigh in with what you think and why you think it over there. Then a series of four town halls in various places around the state. You can find those at WPR.org/presents. Now, the first town hall event that's at Milwaukee Public Library's Centennial Hall, that's coming up Wednesday at 7 p.m. Again, track down those details. Find out how to participate if you're able. It's at WPR.org/presents. If you want to send an email right now to tell us what's on your mind, what you want to hear from us about the upcoming elections, love to hear from you. You can email right now, ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, Wisconsin finance writer Emily Guy Birkin joins the show with advice on easy ways to save some money. Plus, you could join in with your own suggestions for other listeners. Join that conversation that's coming up tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. I had a great visit to Central Wisconsin yesterday with a WPR listener meetup event at Stony Acres Farm in Athens. It was a great day all around. The weather held up really nicely. Even got a flyover from a bald eagle on the ride there. And it's a very scenic area with just the earliest hints of leaves changing. Mainly, though, I had a great time meeting lots of you. I got to talk to people from Athens and from Marshfield, Merrill, Wisconsin Rapids, Wausau, Tomahawk, Stevens Point, Medford, Weston, and more. Sorry if I'm leaving you out. There are more WPR events coming up. Find out if there's one near you at WPR.org/presents. There's another listener meetups coming up in Prairie du Sac. Launch party for the new WPR podcast, Uprooted, coming up, and those Wisconsin Main Street Agenda town hall sessions. Find them all, WPR.org/presents. And if you have thoughts on WPR, let us know how it fits into your day. Email listener@WPR.org to share your feedback with our audience services department. Stay connected. This is Central Time.